I'm George Walker for WFIU Arts. Saturday night's smartly paced performance of Mason Bates and Mark Campbell's The Revolution of Steve Jobs finished to a loudly appreciative standing ovation with loud cheers for the technical crew, the chorus, the principals, and the orchestra. The opera's a co-production, and everything except the IU cast, orchestra, and the Musical Arts Center have come from the premiere in Santa Fe. Next year, it continues its travels to the city where Jobs launched his new device, San Francisco. The opera, conducted by Michael Christie, is a first for composer Bates, and it's full of his signature 21st-century romantic orchestral sound, with an overlay of touches of today's electronics and a pounding bass toward the end, all added by Catherine Jorgensen and Matthew Ridge. Especially prominent were a nod to Steve Jobs' affection for steel-string guitar, with Onur Alakavuklar, and to his meditative leanings with his Zen mentor Kobrin with the percussion ensemble. Veteran librettist Mark Campbell has chosen to focus on thematic connections in Jobs' life. The 18 scenes come from different places and parts of his life. There's a prologue in 1965 in the family's modest garage, and it jumps to the great public announcement in 2007. Back in the garage in 1973, Jobs and his childhood friend Steve Wozniak laugh at a neat, technique-y way to cheat Ma Bell on long distance. Jobs is a complex man. Accomplishments, joy, cruelty, all mixed. He makes love to his girl Christiane in an LSD-inspired landscape in 1974, and later in the sober midst to the thrill of a technical discovery in 1976, demands that the fruit of their love be aborted. Later life's also full of thrills, sensitive and brutal moments. In 1980, both Chrisanne and Steve Wozniak abandon Jobs, and they mourn his becoming one of the people they hated. Following exile from his company, in 1989, Lauren Powell, the woman who seems to humanize Jobs, comes into his life in moving scenes of insight that are in part fueled by Jobs' Buddhist mentor, Kobrin. The music, the characters, and the drama all work together with the aid of a wonderfully flexible set of six large monoliths from set designer Tita Tsaikun. There are lots and lots of lighting and projection from Jafi Wiedemann. They range from complex circuit boards to gentle nature panoramas and even an appreciation of Ansel Adams' photos. Sometimes it seemed as if there was a bit too much of the busy visual, but the nimble, hard-working stage crew kept those set pieces and the show moving. Throughout the hour and a half of The Revolution of Steve Jobs, attention seldom flagged, though there were moments when I was tempted to see the piece as a cantata instead of an opera. The program offered synopses of the scenes. They weren't really needed. The strength of the character development, the themes connecting the scenes in ways that even a straight narrative linear account couldn't have supported. Stage director Kevin Newbery was with the opera for the premiere in Santa Fe with a professional cast and the recording there. He says it's been great to reinvestigate the piece with fresh eyes. Frankly, I enjoyed an opera where the cast and chorus of mostly 20-somethings fits perfectly. In The Revolution of Steve Jobs, there's no need for white wigs, and the only teenager is played by an eighth grader. At IU, the eighth grader's Jake Sater. Saturday night, Edward Clary was an effective Steve Jobs. Gregory McClelland was his childhood friend and later critic Steve Wozniak. I wish that the opera offered more of this humane tenor. Emily Warren was the Reed College professor who set Jobs off on his spiritual travels. David Lee was the thoughtful and often funny Zen mentor, Kobrin. Nicola Santora was a sympathetic figure as the discarded early girlfriend, Chrisanne. Courtney Jameson was a force as the mostly assertive girlfriend and later wife, Laureen Powell. Nick Farmer was Jobs' adoptive father. The IU Opera Theater's production of The Revolution of Steve Jobs wraps up this Friday the 21st and Saturday the 22nd, just as Apple rolls out the iPhone XS and the XS Max. Advances look impressive and prices seem a bit daunting. Apparently, Apple has plenty in stock. Meanwhile, modestly priced tickets for the IU production will probably soon be in short supply. At the theater for you, I'm George Walker.